Human Vortex Training and Menachem Brody present the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast, where we talk strength training, physiology, psychology, tech, and much more to help you get fitter, faster, and stronger in and out of your sport, giving you expert insights, talking with other leading experts. And now, your host, world-leading strength coach for cyclists and triathletes, Menachem Brody.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode number 86 of the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast. Today, we're going to take a look, a superficial dive, if you will, into the core is more. Now, essentially, many of us have been lied to by the mass media and our well-meaning personal trainers or coaches who have told us that the core is the stomach. That is the core of the body. And really, this is it's not even close to being correct. And I really thought that over the last 20 years, we would see people come around, the mass media would start actually telling the truth. And well, it's been 20 years and here we are still people saying, oh, core exercise is crunches and side planks. Well, the side planks is a little bit closer, but as you'll discover in today's podcast, there is far more to it than just going through a singular exercise. And there's a lot we're going to cover today. Really, I just want to have you begin to critically think and start to ask those important questions. And what you should do to get the most out of today's podcast is, as you're going through or when you're done, head on over to the Human Vortex Training YouTube channel at HV Training over on YouTube and take a look at the last few weeks of exercises that have been released here in late February to mid-March of 2020, because a lot of the concepts we're going to talk about are going to be very prevalent in through those exercises. Now, the other part of this is we really want to make sure that we're understanding the forest from the trees. And this is something I think a lot of people miss. I know there was one review on my first book, The Vortex Method, that someone said, oh, I had to go through 80% of the book to get to the workouts. And if this guy talks about strength training or cyclists should strength train another time, I'm going to scream. Well, that individual didn't read more than the first 3.5 pages. And unfortunately, they skipped over all of the important things. Now, it doesn't mean you have to read it, right? So let's be clear about that. It doesn't mean, you know, what upset me most isn't that he's giving me a negative review. It's that he skipped through the 80% of the book, didn't even skim, didn't even look at the tempos, didn't even look at the breathing, didn't even take the time to go through and look at the on-bike workouts where we convert everything that we're doing in the weight room over onto the bike, which is absolutely paramount. And this, again, is because of the mass media saying, well, you just need to lift heavy stuff and you'll be able to ride your bike faster. Well, that's not true. And that's where we're going to kick off today's podcast is, what is it exactly that we need, or what is the core? Let's start there, and then we'll get into what do we need from the core. Well, the core, really, if we had to narrow it down, it should be all of the muscles between your neck, your elbows, and your knees. And really, if we really, really actually want to say the truth, the core is the entire body. Like, there is nothing in the body, no sinew, no muscle is not going to have to contract or relax to some degree in order to get some motion or movement accomplished. Everything is connected. And the core itself, as many think of it, is so short-sighted. We miss, and this is where I think a lot of cyclists are missing, how integral strength training is to allow you to be actually be able to see absolute increases in power that sustain themselves and stick around for long periods of time, because they treat strength training either as, well, this is what we've traditionally done, or they treat it as, well, this is for the winter only. And that is a massive mistake. And there, in fact, there's a growing stable of riders now that have been working with me for at least a calendar year. One of them, I've posted his comments before on my Facebook page. He's in his late 50s. He's setting personal records for all-time power, VO2 max, and for functional threshold. This is somebody who's been riding his bike and training for many years. This isn't somebody who rode their bike for fun and then all of a sudden decided to get serious and so we're seeing results. He has done a lot of work to get himself into good shape, And actually, there's two, now that I think of it, three, sorry, in their mid-50s to early 60s, who are seeing all-time personal best, podiuming, not just because they went up an age group and they're the youngest ones there, but actually getting a lot stronger and winning age groups at the end of the age group. So 58, 59, they are winning. And people are like, how did you get so fast? And they have this conversation with people and say, well, really what I'm doing is consistency with my strength training, 2 to 4 days a week. I'm riding my bike, but I'm not riding it as often. When I go hard, I need to go hard. When I don't need to go hard, I go easy. And people are like, that's not easy. That's not true. That's false. You're making that up. There's some secret sauce that you're not telling me. What is it really? What part do you have on your bike? And a lot of it dials down or comes down to understanding what the core actually is. And that really is at the fundamental, that is the fundamental keystone of everything that I'm doing in my strength training for all of the athletes that I work with, is really looking at the body. The core is everything between the neck, elbows, and knees. So if we can get you as a cyclist who has tight pectoralis minor and major, your chest is tight, your abs tend to get a little bit lax because you're not using them on the bike. When I say abs, we're talking about the rectus abdominis or the six-pack muscle. The obliques are not working as they should. You're lengthening the erector spinae. You're lengthening the longissimus. You're contracting for long periods of time some of the intercostal muscles, which affects how the diaphragm is positioned. And then you're also looking at having tight IT bands because your glutes are weak and unable to do any work, and your internal rotators and of the hip are so out of sorts. Now, I just threw a bunch of stuff out there. So let's start at the beginning. Now, number one is going to be, before we get to the muscles, we have to look at the joint position, because joint position dictates muscle function. Now, if any of you out there took my strength training for cycling, or excuse me, strength training for triathlon success program on Training Peaks University, or the strength training for cyclist certification course, you'll be very familiar with this term. Joint position dictates muscle function. And this is where a lot of people go wrong in their core training, because unlike the biceps and triceps, or the quads and the hamstrings, or the calves and the anterior tibialis, there are no agonists and antagonists, in the midsection, in the core. So if we look at the muscles of the soft belly of the midsection of the body, and also of the core, or of the spinal column, let's say the spinal column, so everything from the hips all the way up the spine, the rib cage, these muscles don't have agonists and antagonists. So when you fire your lats, there isn't one muscle that is going to fire to counteract those forces. It is a symphony orchestra, or it should be a symphony orchestra, of a number of muscles working to counteract and help fine-tune and balance the force that you're creating. Now, this is where a lot of people get lost. So I'm going to try and make it as simple as possible. If you were to think about one of the large radio towers, if you're driving around town and you see that really large radio tower in Pittsburgh, they're all over the top of the hills, because we're hills, so we need to be able to get that signal over the Allegheny Mountains and across to the Midwest or the East Coast. And there's what are called guy wires. So coming off of the tower at strategic points, forward and back, right and left, depending on how you're looking at the tower, at different levels you have these guy wires, which are tensioning the tower enough to keep it from swaying in the wind or from one pulling it down. So if one of those cables snaps, the other three, it's going to lose the tension on that side, and the other three can actually topple the tower. Well, your spine is very much like that. And that is the job of the quote unquote core muscles, is to fine tune and tension each other out to make sure that there's fine balance in through the spine. The challenge we have as cyclists and triathletes, in also modern age people, is that we are spending inordinate amounts of time in a seated or slouched forward position, whether it's at a desk as I'm doing right now, or it's you on your bike, especially in time trial position. Now, there has been a lot of stretching done out there. I still see, you know, these ads on Facebook for a couple approaches, which are just yoga or stretching. And they're telling you, if you just stretch the muscle or hold a pose for a couple of times a day or a week, it's going to get rid of that, you know, psoas, stretch your psoas. Think about the system. Is the psoas the only thing that has shortened in that range of motion? What exactly does the psoas do? Is that the actual cause of back pain in cyclists? It's this professional's opinion that that is not the primary contributor for back pain. In fact, I think that what is often overlooked is the fact that we are spending a lot of time in a forward flex position, something that the lumbar spine is not built for. So over time, the passive tissues actually creep, and this has been studied. Dr. Stuart McGill and a number of other researchers have looked at this, and there is what's called a tissue creep. And this is where, over a long period of time of holding a flexed position, the tissues actually lose much of their resiliency. And in fact, this is one of the interesting things. Females actually retain that elasticity, or excuse me, regain that elasticity faster than males. If I'm not mistaken, off the top of my head, it's somewhere around, I think, 1/4 to 1/3 of the time faster. Now, don't quote me on that specific number, but it is faster than males. I'd have to go back and look at the actual study. But this is fascinating because nobody talks about the passive tissue creep. Everybody's talking about the psoas or the hamstrings. Well, these two things certainly are muscles. Certainly we feel them. I know I do. But that's not the cause, in my opinion, most of the time of the issues. Now, the psoas itself attaches as a hip flexor to the top of the femur, the upper leg bone, and it connects to the lower back. And essentially what it does is it serves as a partial stabilizer as we go through movement. If you open up Low Back Disorders, the third edition, to page 77, I think it is. Let me look. 77. Yeah, 77. Table 3.2 actually has the muscle lengths in centimeters, including tendon length obtained from the upright standing position and from various extreme postures. And this kind of looks at each of the different muscle lengths. And if you read the data, you'll actually see that the psoas is one of many different muscles that need to fire around the lower back in order to allow us to stand. Now, that doesn't take into account what happens further up. And this is where a lot of us really need to readdress and reframe the core to everything between the neck, elbows, and knees. So just to recap so far, we've talked so far about how the core, the muscles don't have an agonist antagonist. They deflect and they fine tune one another, just like those radio towers. So each of the tuning wires needs to be just right to keep from more tension being placed in the system through the other three and causing the spine to topple or things to change in a negative environment. And the psoas and hamstring are often accused of causing lower back pain, but there's also something that is not addressed that a lot of people don't think about, and that's called passive tissue creep. And Dr. McGill does have, actually I have in my book, I have the graphs in the chapter on the lower back and cycling that shows the rodmen, the steel rodmen, who are bent over in a riding-like position, and you can see that over time those passive tissues reach a failure point where they will break. And it's this author's opinion that that is a much larger contributing factor to lower back pain than psoas or hamstring tightness. Now, let's move on to why the core has to be thought about, if you are going to call it the core, everything between the neck, the elbows, and knees. So we're going to skip over to Anatomy Trains by Thomas Myers. Now, this is the fundamental book or the foundational book on the fascial system. A lot of us will be very familiar with the fascia because of the plantar fascia, but in fact, the fascia run all throughout the different body, and there are several what Thomas Myers calls meridians, or unbroken lines, that run throughout the body. Now, there are a couple that are absolutely paramount to understanding how the body works, and that deflection actually goes through the body and the different muscles, everything between the neck, elbows, and knees. Now, we're going to look specifically, there's what's called the functional line, and there's also what's called the spiral line. And now, the thing to remember is what I'm about to talk about, take with a grain of salt, because we're really piecemealing things together. It is far deeper, but again, as I mentioned at the beginning of today's podcast, I want to plant the seeds of thought and critical thinking to have you walk away and begin asking, how do I know this is true, that the core is just the stomach? And why What does Brody know? What do these other back and spine experts and other performance experts know that I don't know? And begin to start to critically think for yourself and have access to these. You have access to these two fantastic resources. So the spiral line is an unbroken fascial system that runs in essentially two parts. So one is going to be from the occiput of the back of the head. So if you kind of cup the back of your head where the helmet ratchets in, so it kind of cups the back, it starts there. It runs down along either side of your spine, including the muscles in between your shoulder blades. It attaches to the, or goes through the hamstring all the way out to the muscles on the outside of the leg, and on the other side of the body, it wraps down and around. So it comes from the base of the skull, it wraps down around the outside of your chest and crosses over the middle of your stomach through the linea alba, through the transverse abdominis, it seems. Now that could not necessarily be true. So it crosses over the six-pack, the rectus abdominis, not necessarily through the transverse abdominis, comes across and down through the tensor fasciae latae, and down through the IT band, essentially, into the anterior tibialis. Now, those of you who have studied the anatomy trains, I know that this is not 100% correct, but I just want to paint the picture for those who are listening here. Now, the thing that's important about this is the spiral line carries from the serratus anterior, or the muscles on the front of the rib cage, those little fingertip-like muscles, through the linea alba. That's the line that will split through those who are carrying a baby, or if you have had an injury or a tear because of inability to produce intra-abdominal pressure, or you've carried something too heavy that can split and cause your stomach to kind of dome up or get soft and squishy in the middle. And it crosses over to the anterior superior iliac spine. And that's just the bone on the front of your hip through the internal oblique. Now think about that. We're going from right shoulder across the stomach to the left hip through the internal oblique and through the linea alba. These are two areas that a lot of people neglect. They'll say crunches, bicycle crunches, they'll go through these crunching motions, but really what we need to have is a cross-body stability, if you will, where the serratus anterior and this muscle is often frozen. In many triathletes that I've seen that have had issues with freestyle or even with butterfly, believe it or not, breaststroke, yet they can do butterfly, which is not such a great idea, but they do. You know, we're triathletes, we like to push HTFU, which is really silly in my opinion and my experiences, but hey, we'll roll with it. And essentially, when we look at the serratus anterior, that muscle helps control the shoulder blade move forward and down on the rib cage, and it also controls the shoulder blade as it comes back. It eccentrically stretches as the shoulder blade comes back and close together. Now, what's really important here is that as you're thinking about this, your shoulder function affects how your ribs are going to move or not move. So this is a way that I've, quote unquote, this is their words, not mine, I've increased this specific rider's VO2 max number through the strength training, which is not what happened at all, but that's how they interpreted it. What actually happened is we got their shoulder blade to move better. Actually, both of their shoulder blades, better postures. We got them to be able to move the ribs, and the ribs should move up and out like bucket handles as you breathe in, if you're breathing right, and allow you to actually get more air in. So I didn't increase the athlete's VO2 max, but I did allow them to tap into more of the tidal volume that they already had. They're able to breathe in more air, and de facto, I don't know if that's the right word. Today we're full of wrong words. By definition, because they're bringing more air, they can do more work. I didn't actually improve their VO2 max. Maybe they did test higher, but we physically gave them more space that they should have had access to. Now, to stay on point here, do you hear, by the way, that little rabbit hole I just went down? Do you hear how the strength training and thinking about how your core is everything between the neck, elbows, and knees, is that starting to make a little sense now? So we're not just looking at planks and side planks and holding for long periods of time and bicycle crunches and back extensions. We have to think about how everything relates to one another and how things are moving. So the spiral line on the backside goes from the lateral hamstring, and it connects to the superficial back line. And this goes up through the ligament along the outside of the spine, the rectus spinae, to the base of the skull where it began, to quote the Thomas Myers book, page 141 on the second edition, for those of you following along at home. Now, the interesting thing about this is it also ties into the rhomboids. And the rhomboids are a muscle that are on the back of the body. They help bring the shoulder blade forward and up and back and down. And this is something that a lot of people, I think, miss for a number of reasons. That muscle is also going to tie in with the mid and lower trapezius. Now, if you like and subscribe and share this podcast with five other people, in a couple of episodes here, you're going to hear from Erin Carstens. Now, Erin is the strength coach at EC Fit Boulder. She's one of the very few strength coaches out there working with endurance athletes that is doing it right, in my opinion. And we'll hear from her about the mid and lower traps, and we'll also hear about how little she loads, and there's actually no load for these professional triathletes and others that come to her for strength training. First, it's focused on learning how to movement competency. But if you listen to this podcast again before you go through that episode, when it's released in a couple of weeks, you'll hear a lot of the undertones in what Erin's talking about based upon what we have discussed here. Now, that mid and lower trap, to get back on point here, attaches across and opposite both ways. So it attaches up and across opposite sides through the splenoid muscles, which go up to the base of the skull. These are the muscles that help us hold our head into extension when we're riding. And then they attach down and across from the rhomboids to the same side serratus anterior that we just talked about, where the shoulder blade comes down and forward as it should, or if it does what it should. But a lot of people don't have that as cyclists because we get into this high shoulder position where we're shrugging our shoulders up to our knees as we get tired, and we see the snake come out as we climb up the road, or we try and push the pedals a little bit harder. Now, as we start to think about the core, do you understand now, do you hear how this one fascia system, this line, starts at the base of your right skull, goes down and across at about a 70 degree angle, attaches to the rhomboid muscle, which is the back of your shoulder blade, and comes around and under that opposite chest into the serratus anterior, and then it comes across your body through your rectus abdominis and linea alba to go back to the same side that it started on the front of the hip, and then to come down through the TFL, essentially down to the IT band and down to the muscles on the outside of the leg. Let that sink in. This one line, this is uninterrupted. And what's interesting about the fascia is that if you go and you do cadaver anatomy, if you're not someone who has a stomach for it, you can still learn this stuff. Dr. Kathy Dooley of Immaculate Dissection does a fantastic job where they actually do quote unquote dissection, but what they'll do is they'll paint on, and it's fantastically realistic. So I strongly recommend, she's been doing a lot of stuff online since Corona, so if you're interested in learning this stuff, that's how I would do it, because you'll learn a lot. But if you do get an opportunity to take a cadaver course, when you look at the fascia, it essentially is smooth. So as long as you don't cut it, you're maintaining one system. So if you've ever seen the Bodies exhibit, regardless of what your thoughts are as to the controversy behind it, if you've ever seen it, you can actually see some of these fascial systems because they've cut them or they've kept them. And a number of people that I sent there said, well, I don't understand why these muscles are connected. Why didn't they cut them apart? Why is, I don't remember what the specific one was, but an athlete came back with a specific question. You know, why is this all one piece? And I said, because that's the fascial system. And then I pulled out the Anatomy Trains book and everything kind of clicked. They're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense now. The fascia runs around the whole body. So these are just several meridians, but essentially all of the muscles, all the 613 parts of the body are all intertwined with the fascia and other pieces of connective tissue. Now, if you look at a cadaver who had an injury and it wasn't properly rehabbed, you'll actually find that there will be a fascial web that has been woven around the injured area to help the muscles be able to better work It is absolutely fascinating. Now, I want to be completely honest. I haven't seen this with my own two eyes in person. I've seen pictures and I've heard from other professionals who have done this. And it is just absolutely fascinating how the body... Now, this happens over years. It doesn't happen over a couple of days. Like, it takes years for this to happen, if not months. But you can see this in the cadavers where they were not properly rehabbed. And they look through the charts because these people knew that they were going to dedicate their bodies or donate their bodies to science. So they knew that. And they look back and they see, oh yeah, sure enough, MCL tear with an ACL tear and meniscus. And it's just fascinating. Okay, so that was another little rabbit hole. The fascial system, to recap, the fascial system, there are several meridians that run through the body that are there that connect different muscles that often we don't think of are connected. So another little short parable for you is I was in the gym before Corona last summer. This was before I got my fibula broken and some shiny new hardware put on down there. And there was a trainer there, female trainer, and essentially she had, for a couple weeks, she was rubbing her elbow and doing all these stretches and doing all this stuff. And I kind of know her. I mean, we both work in the same facility. She works out of the same facility, rather. And after about a week and a half, I just said, hey, so-and-so, do you mind if I kind of take a look? And she's like, sure, not a problem if you want to. I've seen a physical therapist. They've given me these stretches. I saw an acupuncturist, and they're doing it, but it just won't get better. So I did a quick assessment, literally took 4.5 minutes, because I had been assessing her for about 2.5 weeks. So if you've taken the strength training for cyclist certification course, you'll understand what I was doing. Your assessment starts as soon as you see somebody, right? And it was very apparent that her elbow pain was actually coming from her shoulder and upper neck. I just asked her a couple questions. You know, I noticed a few weeks ago that your neck was bothering you before this started. Can you tell me what happened? She's like, oh, that's not related. And I said, just, you know, play with it. Just entertain me. Can you just tell me what happened? Oh, well, I was doing this exercise, which is new, and it's more gymnastics, da-da-da-da-da. And clearly, very clearly, it was an injury to the fascial system. Something had gotten pinched up in the shoulder, and then muscles started shutting down. She kept training because she thought it was normal for gymnastics. Long story short, she decided that what I had to say, no, you're wrong, it's not the shoulder. And it took her about four months to rehab that because she just kept going to more physical therapists and whatever else. Now, the moral of the story is not that, oh, Brody's amazing, blah, blah, blah. It is that there are many things are interconnected, but we don't know what we don't know. And this is where, you know, you're going to need to find somebody who can speak your language. In this one, I spoke her language. I clearly delineated to her, this is what's going on, undoubtedly, but she wanted to go the route with physical therapists. And after the fourth or fifth one, they finally reached the shoulder because everything else had been ruled out. She's like, oh, this new therapist is great. And I was like, yeah. And, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, well, the last four just went up the arm and now you're just at the shoulder. So it was kind of a well done moment for that physical therapist. If you missed that one, you should go back to school. That was mean. No, but there should be a certain level of professional proficiency, right? That doesn't mean we have all the answers and we all have different perspectives, but this is one of the examples of how different parts of the body are related, even though we don't think they are. So just something to think about. And I strongly recommend if you are considering yourself as a coach, and you like to really help your athletes, there are three books that you should add to your repertoire. Number one, Anatomy Trains by Thomas Myers. This will help you start to connect things, pun intended, across the body. Number two, either Low Back Disorders by Dr. Stuart McGill, the third edition, or whatever the newest one is by the time you listen to this. And you should also pick up my book, The Vortex Method. It'll be re-released under a different name here in the coming months. We've revised it. We've made it a second edition, put in some new charts, new information, brand new editor. So really deep dive to clean it up. Again, you don't know what you don't know, right? I'm very guilty of that as well through my training career, as well as publishing my first book. Now, one of the things I do want to point out with that book is there's so much in there. And, you know, somebody had left a review I can't remember if I talked about this already, but they just had to go through 80% of the book to get to the workouts. That's because this book took five years to write because I didn't want it to be, here's a simple workout. I want it to be, here's what we're doing, here's why it works, here's how to convert it into cycling, here are the specific tempos you need, as well as all the information that you need in order to build a cycling-specific or triathlon result-specific training program. Because the number of books that are out there just tell you one approach, they don't give you the tools, and that's exactly what this book does. So the second edition will be out soon. Those are the three books, Thomas Myers, Anatomy Trains, Dr. Stuart McGill, Low Back Disorders, and The Vortex Method, or whatever, my book, whatever it is under that name, the first book. Now, just to wrap up for today, we've really covered a lot, and I just want to bring it back to what many of us think of as the core. So we've kind of gone off the path. We spoke about the deflection that happens through the different muscles of the core, quote unquote, what most people call the core, which is the stomach. There are no agonist antagonists. There needs to be a balance there. It's like that radio tower, very high radio tower with those guy wires coming off. If one of them breaks or one of them's overtuned, it's going to cause a disturbance in that balance, and that can lead to injury. And then we spoke about the fascial system and how there are different lines, or as Thomas Myers calls them, meridians in the body that need to be thought of. Now, this doesn't mean you only train by the meridians. Let me make that very clear. That is a mistake a lot of people make, is they only focus on one meridian or two meridians. It's just a piece of information that you lay on to your mental blueprint, as Brett Bartholomew calls, your mental blueprint of how things work, and you just have that in the back of your mind. It helps you pick up things like what I just talked about with the trainer, that it was coming from her neck on the opposite side and her shoulder on the opposite side, not from the elbow where it was actually hurting. So these are lots of different things. I'm hoping that you're just sitting there and like, man, I need to share this with like four or five people, because it's just mind blowing. This is beyond me. I need to get these books. But this is where we need to go as a community, as a sport. We need to stop thinking about piecemeal. There is a long way for us to go as cyclists and triathletes. And we see that with some of the reviews, or I see that with some of the reviews that I got on my book. Now, the two or three that said, was there an editor? They're right. I took somebody who I thought had enough experience, and they did, but in a different genre, which made a big difference. But there are some others that said, oh, I had to go through, like I said before, we don't need to uncap that again. But do you hear how there's so much more to it? And you don't need to know this information, but you should at least skim through it and have it awareness in your world of what exactly there is out there. Now, let's come back and we'll finish up. We'll wrap up what most people think of as the core, and that is your stomach. Now, when you actually look at that area, there are so many different layers there. And this is one of the things that I've had the opportunity to really get to know very deeply and very well. There's still far more for me to learn. So I don't know it all, but I know more than the average trainer and coach. And really what it comes down to is your stomach, your quote-unquote core, as the mass media and most coaches call it. It's not just your six-pack and your obliques. You have the rectus abdominis on the front. You have the transverse abdominis underneath that. You have the internal oblique. Then you have the external oblique, which run counter to one another. Then on the backside, you have the psoas. Everybody knows the psoas because they, like we talked about, they blame it for lower back pain. Then you have the quadratus lumborum, which is a fairly large muscle, fairly robust. You have the latissimus dorsi. The lats are also running all the way down the spine. You have the thoracolumbar fascia, which helps tie all of this together, which we've talked about. You have another muscle called the iliocostalis, which is fairly robust along the furthest outer point of the muscles from your spine. You have the longissimus, which is right along, outside of being right along that spine. And you have the multifidi muscle, which act as proprioceptors within the spine as well. So just right there, we have 10 muscles. And then on top of that, you also have the diaphragm, you have the deep hip rotators of the pelvic floor, right? So you have all of these different muscles that need to be trained, even if you're just to focus on the core, as most people talk about it. So these are the considerations that you need to take. The core is far more than just your stomach, and it is far more reaching than just thinking about working on rotary stability. It's working on the systems as a whole. And this is where a well-rounded strength training approach does need to train and must train upper body. And most cyclists forego this, or they'll just do a couple pull downs or a couple rows and then call it a day. Now, we don't need to be in the gym doing bicep curls and tricep push downs necessarily. There may be some people who are, these are appropriate exercises. They tend to be very few and far between and for very short periods of time. However, we do need to learn how to create proximal stiffness, or stiffness along the spine, the ribcage, and the pelvis, to get movement from the hip and shoulder. Many of us as cyclists and triathletes spend so much time in that crunched forward position that we just lose that ability and we don't have the mind-muscle connection. Taking the time to go through and build these is not glorious. It's not sexy. It's not going to sell tens of thousands of books, even if you give them away for 99 cents, because people just aren't going to be interested in that. The core is everything in my stomach, they're going to tell you, and I need crunches. I need to feel the exercise. Well, you don't necessarily need to feel the exercise, but you do need to pay attention to how you do the exercise. And that's what was written in this past week's Pez Cycling News blog post that I put, or article I put up on the Pez Cycling News toolbox. So you can find the link to that here in the notes and the show description. So that's just part one of part two, and the editor has done a fantastic job with making some of my work that's this specific piece is a little bit abstract for many people. He's like, there's got to be a take home. You're saying pay attention to form, and that's about it. Can you give examples? But that's where we are in this sport, is needing to have the feel. So there is a link to Facebook Live that I put up a number of weeks ago, I think 2 weeks ago when I first wrote that piece. And there's also a video linking to an eyes closed single leg deadlift. So if you think you're strong enough to do a single leg deadlift with great technique, number one, try it with your eyes open and see if you can actually keep the full body stiffness that you need while getting the range of motion at the hip. Most of us can't. I know that on my right leg, I can't great right now. I can do two or three reps, still going through the rehab process. Thanks, Corona. But that is where we're at. We've got to start thinking about the cores, everything between the neck, the elbows, and the knees. So this has been a superficial dive, and I hope some of you or many of you don't have your heads about to explode or spinning, but that your eyes have been opened a little bit. So again, Thomas Myers, Anatomy Trains, get the most updated edition, Stu McGill, Low Back Disorders, and then my book, The Vortex Method is what its original name was. It'll come out as another. I'll link below to that. You can find it on Amazon. Just look for my name, Menachem Brody Book. And there is a lot more to go down this path, but I hope you found this episode today to be very insightful. And for those of you who are like the review and you know, you want to blow through the 80% and just do a workout, do that for a little bit, but skim back, go back through, pick three pages to go through and read. If you don't want to read about the reason things work or the tempos or how we structure things, that's fine. But read about the lower back. Understand that tight hamstrings and tight psoas, and in my opinion, for the vast majority of cyclists, are not the cause of back pain, but rather it's passive tissue stretch. It's a shifting of the nucleus due to long times in a forward flex position, poor strength overall, poor stability, and a number of other factors that contribute to that. It's not those two muscles being tight. It's a far deeper story than that, but also far simpler. If you found today's episode to be useful and insightful in understanding at a better level and opening your eyes to that the core truly is more than just your midsection or your stomach, go ahead and give us a 5-star review over on whatever podcast purveyor you have downloaded or listened to this episode. And please share it with 5 to 10 people who need to hear this message or begin to have their minds open. Head on over to the Human Vortex Training website and sign up for our free weekly newsletter, where we'll give you a rundown of all of the content that we've put out on a weekly basis. You will find what type of coffee I'm drinking, as you can hear in the background, that is getting prepared. The joys of being at home in Corona. And you can also pick up a strength training program There are a number that are available over on the Human Vortex Training website, or if you would like to work with me, I am taking on clients right now for the Big Gear Blueprint Program. Now, this is unlike anything else you've gone through. It is going to be fantastically detailed if you're looking to really learn and learn more about things like we're doing today, like on this week's call, which is actually going to be tomorrow as I'm recording this. We're going to dive in on that call. One of the Big Gear Blueprint participants asked about more detail in the McGill Crunch. So do you understand the level of value now that's in that group? This isn't one-on-one coaching. They are group calls, question and answer, that are live. You get to ask me your questions, send them in beforehand, as well as get a personalized strength or strength and on-bike program, and then get to learn a lot more. So you're not just getting your questions answered, you're also getting to hear and learn from what others are going through. So if you're interested in that, go ahead and shoot me an email, B as in boy, R-O, D as in dog, I-E, at humanvortextraining.com. And remember, until next time, train smarter, not harder, because it is all about you.
That's it for this episode of the Strong Savvy Cyclist and Triathlete Podcast with world-leading strength coach for cyclists and triathletes, Menachem Brody. Don't miss an episode. Hit that subscribe button and give us a review. For more exclusive content, visit humanvortextraining.com or get the latest expert videos from Coach Brody on the HVT YouTube channel at HV Training. Until next time. Remember to train smarter, not harder, because it is all about you.